Our next case for argument, United States versus Favara and Festival, Mr. Muldoon.
May it please the court. I'm John Muldoon. I represent defendant appellant Christine Favara. The record is clear in this case that the district court intended to give Ms. Favara the minimum sentence based upon the guideline level. The court originally gave Ms. Favara a sentence of 78 months when the court was informed that the proper level was 28, the minimum. When the level was corrected to 27, she immediately gave a 70-month imprisonment term, the minimum, without any explanation. Further, the record is clear that the court gave short shrift to Ms. Favara's mental condition. The evidence before the court regarding Ms. Favara's mental condition came solely from Dr. Wallstrom. Dr. Wallstrom's report clearly stated that Ms. Favara suffered from major impairments in judgment due to her bipolar disorder, and that these impairments were affected her thinking, her mood, affecting work and social relationships. The court diminished this finding, this uncontroverted finding, by stating that while the bipolar disorder may have diminished her judgment, the fact that she did not treat her condition was an aggravating factor for Ms. Favara. In contradiction to Dr. Wallstrom's finding that fragmented treatment adherence is a symptom of the bipolar disorder.
But of course it makes her more dangerous, right? More likely to recidivate if she refuses treatment.
Well, Judge, I think that's the insidious nature of this disease.
Yeah, but look, it makes a person more dangerous.
Well, there's not.
There's no defense of the, unless you have an insanity defense. The fact that you have mental problems that makes you more dangerous is a perfectly permissible reason for a longer sentence.
Well, Judge, I don't think there's any indication in the record regarding Ms. Favara being dangerous.
Look at a long criminal history.
Judge,
there's... I mean, dangerous in the sense of violent. I mean dangerous in the sense of likely to commit crimes in the future.
Well, Judge, there are no... If you look closely at the record, there are no criminal convictions in her background. There are... there is an SEC civil...
Misconduct
with a slap on the wrist of a cease and desist. No restitution in that case. No fine in that case. There is indications of other SEC violations. We're all part of this scheme, which was instituted by Mr. Custable and ensnared not only Ms. Favara but other business owners. So, Judge, the record, and which is all we have to go on, is that there's no indication that Ms. Favara is dangerous. She has gotten herself involved in questionable business dealings, but no criminal convictions.
But you regard her mental condition as mitigating in the sense that it makes her more likely to commit these frauds.
No, Judge, that's not my argument.
Why? What's the mitigation?
The mitigation
isn't it diminished responsibility?
Is that this condition impairs her judgment?
And makes her more likely to commit frauds, right?
Be more susceptible, Judge.
Right,
I think
more
to
susceptible.
To
so if she's not. If she won't take any treatment, then in the future she's also going to be more susceptible, right?
Well, Judge, I think in the future now, I mean, her present situation is such. It has finally resulted in a criminal conviction, not only a criminal conviction, but significant term of imprisonment. I think that in any type of these type of mental conditions, mental diseases such as alcoholism, drug addiction, it takes a person to hit rock bottom before they can start back on the road to recovery.
You hit rock bottom?
Chuck, I don't know if you can get much rock bottom, much more rock bottom than imprisonment in a federal facility.
And you got to jump into your other.
Yes, I do, Judge. I understand that. In addition, we've said a little bit about the mischaracterization of her past, and also these other people who were ensnared were given probationary sentences, which. But what was different about Ms. Favara than her probation is this aggravating factor of the bipolar and this misrepresentation or mischaracterization of her past. So we think that the judge did not, the district court did not take all these factors into consideration and merely wanted to sentence Ms. Favara to the minimum, which indicates that she had the presumption that the guideline sentencings were reasonable and therefore an impermissible sentence. Thank you for your time.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Muldoon. Mr. Martin?
May it please the court. The double counting issue in this appeal initially raises questions of grouping. And grouping issues have been found by this court to be difficult. The grouping issue in this case reminds me of the logical reasoning section of the LSAT exam, which I took over 20 years ago. And in this case, what the probation officer did, and the district court made no independent findings on grouping, was relied upon Application Note 5 to Section 3D1.2. And he did something odd in that he created two groups, one group consisting of the fraud counts and the other group consisting of the obstruction counts, but then he took an obstruction-related count, contempt, and placed it in the fraud group. If the court were to apply just a straight separate harms analysis, as has been done in previous cases, then there's two separate harms here. There's a harm created by the fraud offenses, and there's a harm created by the obstruction offenses. In fact, Application Note 5 states that in order to take a collateral count and put it in a group, that count has to be closely related to the other group counts. In this case, the contempt count, count 22, was not closely related. It was a separate actions committed to effectuate it. It was committed at separate times. It involved a separate harm and separate victims. It's the system as a whole that is harmed by obstruction, whereas in Custable's fraud, it was the buyers of these penny stocks that were harmed. The purpose of Application Note 5 is to prevent double counting. So in this case, it's been stood on its head to really result in double counting because Mr. Custable gets a two-point increase for the violation of a court order and a two-point increase for obstruction. And it's kind of ironic in this case. It's usually the government's arguing for separate groups, and here it's inverse because they now say, well, it all could have been one group. Under Application Note 5, if you're going to take a collateral count and include it in a fraud group, it has to be the most serious offense. And in this case, the probation officer did not take the most serious offense. He took a contempt count, which is a sui generis type offense with no maximum or no minimum, and it was a contempt count that involved the transfer of $5,000. Well, there was another obstruction count that involved the transfer of $10,000. I suppose that's more serious. And there was another obstruction account that involved an attorney lying to the SEC. I suppose that's more serious. More importantly, if you look at the obstruction and the contempt count, and it gets confusing because it's charged as obstruction, it's charged as contempt, and it's charged as obstruction. If you look at the first obstruction count, it occurred on the heels of the scheme. The scheme was alleged to have ended in May of 2002, according to the wire transmissions, in June of 2002, according to the indictment, according to the plea declaration. And Mr. Lucy, Attorney Lucy's conduct in relation to the SEC occurred in July of 2002. It was after the scheme, but at least was on the heels of the scheme. The SEC asset freeze violations, which were placed in Group 1, the fraud counts, occurred in March and April of 2003, well after the scheme had concluded and after a lawsuit had been filed. Even if the court were to assume that the obstruction in count 22 and the obstruction in the count numbers.
What do you think would have been the correct calculation?
The correct overall calculation? The violation of a judicial order enhancement would not apply. So that would take 2 points off.
How would it count? And you're saying because that was counted in the fraud?
Because when you walk the contempt offense or the obstruction offense through the specific offense characteristics, the specific offense characteristic says that if the conduct is otherwise covered by the guidelines, then don't apply the specific offense characteristic. In here, it was otherwise covered by the guidelines in the form of a Chapter 3 enhancement, a two-level enhancement. In Your Honor, when you ask me how it applies,
this is the violation of the judicial order we're talking about?
Yes. So we're saying that's taken out. You take that out. Now, what do you do with the obstruction offenses? If they're just put in a separate group, like we think they should, then you have to apply the grouping rules, and rather confusing, but then you determine how many units apply to each one. But as we noted in footnote 8 of our brief, there is a possibility that the regrouping, so to speak, would result in a tangible incremental, and that's the words of the cases, increase in the punishment, in that it would add one level to the overall offense level. So you take two out, and then you compare the difference between the fraud group and the obstruction group, and because in this case it would be six, it would result in 1.5 units, the addition of one level. It is also our position.
So
in
he's
the
worse off under?
I'm sorry.
He's worse off?
No,
under
no,
this
Your
argument?
Honor, because I should have prefaced my answer with this. The government's conceded that the base offense level was miscalculated.
Right.
So you start with a level six instead of a seven. And so now when you start with that lower level and you take off the 2 points, your overall level goes lower. So I'm 3 points lower overall before applying these unit rules. And there's a possibility, we don't concede it, but there's a possibility the application of the unit rules result in the addition of one level. So it's really
which
two,
still comes in two lower.
Two lower instead of three.
Which makes what kind of a difference in the range?
The bottom of that range would be 210 months. So.
And what did he get? 262?
He received 262, which is 21 years.
And was that the bottom of the calculated range?
It was the bottom of the calculated range. And this was a defendant who cooperated but received no.
How old is he?
He's in his mid-40s, Your Honor. I think he was born in 1964. Okay, my time's up.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Martin. Mr. Podliska?
Your Honors, may it please the Court, John Podliska for the United States. There was no double counting here, Your Honors. The conduct that was the subject matter of counts 21 and 22, that's the obstruction and the contempt in 2003, that was the violation of a prior judicial order. There was an order in that civil proceeding freezing the assets of Mr. Custable's corporation, the Suburban Capital Corporation, and he and his principal employee, Sarah Wetzel, who was a co-defendant in the case, removed the money out from under that freeze order, took the money out of the bank account, put it in another account, and some of that money was additionally spent from the second account. So that is separate and distinct conduct from the obstruction in count 20 that involved Mr. Custable inducing the attorney Robert Luce to interfere with an SEC investigation of his fraudulent behavior.
And that's the one that got counted in the offense level characteristics?
That was the conduct that caused the enhancement for under 3C1.1 for obstruction of justice.
Okay. Which is the count
so
that got included? There was another obstruction that was included in the
defense
characteristics? I'm trying to keep them straight here.
Yes. Mr. Custable was charged with obstruction and contempt for the fact circumstance where he violated the freeze order and moved the money out of the account.
And that's what got included in the offense characteristics calculation, but not these other two.
You know, the both of them, there was an enhancement under 3C1.1 for obstruction for the conduct of obstructing the SEC investigative inquiry.
Right.
Then there's a second enhancement for violating a prior judicial order under 2B1.1B8C. That enhancement was for the obstructive conduct of violating the freeze order.
Okay.
Now,
none of that conduct got counted in the offense level characteristics is what you're telling us.
Both of those were included in the calculation that was applied by the court. Those enhancements were both applied to the underlying fraud convictions.
I thought the rule was you're not supposed to do that if it's going to form the basis of an enhancement. Is that not the rule?
Well, the probation officer confused matters by separating them off as separate groups and also by including them as enhancements. But we clarified that at the sentencing hearing to say that there should be, as we've put in our brief now, there's only one group. There's the mail wire fraud and securities fraud counts. And these are specific offense characteristics of those convictions, because the one is Mr. Custable avoiding detection of the underlying fraud scheme. That's when he induces Mr. Luce to obstruct the SEC investigation. The second one, he's avoiding responsibility for the commission of the fraud because he's removing money from that account. And that's the account to which the proceeds from the fraud had been flowing during the course of the fraud. The suit that's going on there is the SEC's civil
litigation.
And was
that the violation of the judicial order when he removed the money?
Yes.
So that's right.
But the question is, did that form the basis in part of the ultimate offense level finding?
Yes.
And how is that not double counting?
It's not double counting because it's two separate factual bases. Section D is providing for incremental punishment for additional criminal conduct. Mr. Custable is not entitled to a pass on the obstructive conduct that he did in connection with the violation of the freeze order simply because there's already been an obstruction of justice enhancement for the other obstruction that he carried out in connection with the SEC. Those are different provisions of the guidelines. One can be used for obstruction of justice for the SEC interference. The other is the violation of a prior judicial order. That's a separate enhancement.
No, I understand those are two separate enhancements. The question is whether that conduct can also be considered in calculating whatever his
fraud
conduct is for purposes of getting at the initial offense level. Isn't that what this appeal is all about?
Because the argument is that it was used twice, and the probation officer in the pre-sentence report used the obstruction from the violation of the freeze order along with the SEC violation, for both enhancements. And that was the argument at sentencing that it is being used twice.
But also for bumping up the offense, the initial offense level number, right?
Yes. Well, he grouped the contempt conviction with the fraud, the mail wire and securities fraud. And because of the high sentence possible for contempt, he felt that there should have been a 7 for a base offense level. We've conceded that should not be. The base offense level here should be the base offense level for the mail wire fraud and securities fraud counts, and that's a 6.
And so the violation of the judicial order and the business involving Luce did not enter into that fraud, that 6?
No.
It would have been the probation officer wanted to use it to push it up to 7, but the judge didn't use that. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, we're conceding that remand is necessary here, Your Honor, because it was too high, but it should not have been. It should be. Correct.
So you're saying the remand would cure that problem?
Yes, the remand cures that problem. It should be offense level 37, not the 38 that was used to impose the sentence. But now the defense is arguing that it ought to come down one level more, and that we do not agree with.
What's the difference in the base in the? Maybe this was answered in response to Judge Sykes, but is the 36 and 37, is that the difference between 210 and 262?
No, that's going to be.
That would be 37 to 36?
That's the difference between 210 and 235, Your Honor.
That's what the remand would be about.
That's what the fight is about at this point. The argument, the dispute now is, should this go back as a 37 where the low end would be 235, or as a 36 where it would be 210?
I see. Did the government make a recommendation of a sentence?
Yes, we did. We recommended within the guideline range, Your Honor. We did not recommend below guideline range because of the problem.
I understand because of that business with the foreign accounts. But so what did you recommend?
We recommended within the guideline range. We did not specify where within that range the court ought to act.
I see. You didn't specify a number of months or years.
We did not, Your Honor. We left that to the discretion of the court.
Were at rest with or without your permission?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
I said, were at rest with or without your permission.
I'm sorry, I still didn't.
I said, where it rests with or without your permission.
That's correct. Well, yes. Yes, Your Honor.
How did I throw that at you?
It was completely within the discretion of the court to select the sentence within that range. With respect to...
Just another question about Custable. How much did he get out of this fraud? Do we know?
The fraud was about $4 million, Your Honor. There were, of course, expenses in connection with that. He dispersed funds to some of the companies that he brought into the scheme. The focus of the seriousness of this, though, really wasn't so much on the money. The court, of course, points out that he was the mastermind of the scheme, but it's really much more than that. Every one of these defendants, with the exception of Ms. Favara, who had a history both before and after this fraud of fraudulent behavior, the other defendants had no records of any kind of misconduct or fraud, no criminal backgrounds, no civil fraud. These were business people. This was Robert Luce is a securities lawyer who was an instructor at one of the law schools in the area for a number of years. They were drawn into this scheme. Mr. Custable used these people, and they were at the same time, they all ended up as defendants because in the end they knew what they were doing, and what they were doing was a violation of the law. But these were not people who came into this to commit a crime. These were people who were searched out by Mr. Custable and brought into this. So he drew in Mr. Luce with no criminal record and a respected reputation as a lawyer. He drew in these other business people. He reached out to these companies. These were failing companies. They were on the brink of extinction. And he held out to them the money that could save their dream. And all they had to do for him was to fraudulently issue him stock. And they became defendants because they did. He took that stock. He took a student at NYU who was familiar with the Internet and the use of spam emails and used him to boost these companies on the Internet so that he could hold up the price and the volume of the shares of the stock so he could unload millions of shares of stock into the market. All these people ended up convicted felons as a result of this scheme. And he didn't know, part of what he explained at sentencing was he didn't know anything about this area of the securities law. He had prior run-ins with disciplinary authorities in the past with the NASD and the Securities Commission in Indiana. But he had, as a stockbroker, where he was doing unauthorized trading in his clients' accounts, but he didn't have any background in this. And part of the insidiousness of this is he reached out to people who did know and did understand how these securities regulations in this industry, this practice worked. He reached out to Mr. Luce and to another securities lawyer, had them educate him on how this all worked.
I don't know how that makes this more insidious. If these people had just said no, he wouldn't have gotten away with this.
Well, that's right. But what was insidious about it is he searched out the companies where they were the most vulnerable. These were companies where they were publicly traded
companies.
Most
criminals seek out vulnerable accomplices that they can, you know, co-opt when there's a group crime like this.
Well,
when there's a strong incentive to go along with the leader.
Oftentimes they search out people who already are involved in the kinds of crimes that they're committing. They're seeking colleagues. Here, he was victimizing these people.
He went to people who were willing to be victimized, is what you're suggesting.
They were because of the vulnerable position they were in, and that's exactly right. I mean, they end up as convicted felons because that's right.
I think
all they had to do was say no.
That diminishes the nature of the true victims of the fraud to characterize the co-defendants as victims.
No, I don't mean to do that. And there's more than 250 victims here. And it was our indictment that brought the charges against the people. It's absolutely right that they could not defend on this, that they were victimized by Mr. Custable. But the court pointed out as one of the reasons in imposing sentence here, the manipulative impact he had on these people and how he was able to use them for his purposes.
Heaney was a very, very good con man.
Yes, he was. He's a very intelligent man, and he used his intelligence for a malicious purpose, and that was what resulted in the sentence that was imposed. If there are no further questions.
So you wanted to say something about Mr. Favar?
Well, yes, Your Honor. The district court analyzed the circumstances for Ms. Favara. The court went through a dozen aggravating and mitigating circumstances before in resolving the sentence with respect to Ms. Favara. And when she analyzed the bipolar circumstances, she analyzed both the aggravating and the mitigating circumstances of that. And she came down on the side of the need to protect the public, as was indicated in the court's question. There was an illness here, but there was also a recognition of this illness. This had been diagnosed some 17 years before. And Ms. Favara hadn't merely failed to take her medication. She had actually binged on the medication. She would fill the prescriptions, multiply filling the prescriptions, hold back the medications, and then binge on them so that she was actually abusing the medications, not just not taking the medication so that she was being affected by the lack of medication. It was the added danger of having her binging on this medication as well. And in addition, some of these offenses here, they required a great deal of thought and concentration on her part. So the court recognized that the bipolar disorder was a contributing factor to the violation, but there was more to it than that, because some of the frauds that she had committed in the past and the fraud that she committed here really involved a capacity to convince other people. She was inducing her employees to sign fraudulent affidavits so that there could be stock issued in their name that would then be conveyed to Mr. Custable. There was a reasoning process here that was something different than what would be resulting from some of the other problems that she had, like employee theft, kind of spontaneous kind of offenses where you could look to the disorder. There was that impact on her behavior, but there was as well a conscious and deliberate ability on her part to perpetrate these frauds. We're talking about insider trading had occurred in the past and that sort of thing. Plus, in terms of the realization of she'd hit rock bottom, well, she was indicted in this case, and while she was on bond, she went out and committed yet another fraud. There was a $155,000 fraud where she defrauded the parents of an individual she was dating, posing as an investment advisor and taking their money and supposedly to invest it on their behalf, and she simply stole the money. So that all of that, the court balanced to say that the risk to the public required the sentence that was imposed, and the process by which she reached that was fair and appropriate, and we would ask that part of the appeal that certainly be affirmed with respect to the conviction and sentence. With respect to Mr. Custable, we ask that be remanded for further consideration by the court with an offense level of 37.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Podoliska. So, Mr. Muldoon or Mr. Martin, you have anything further?
In fact, I'd like to address one thing that the government brought up, and it's kind of the dichotomy in this case. Mr. Custable ensnared the other corporate officers, ensnared a lawyer, a professor of law, by his cunning and his schemes. Ms. Favara also got caught up in that snare. She's no different. She was an officer of a failing company. She was, it didn't take her any more, she didn't have any more cunning than the other, or the scheme didn't have, require more cunning than the other corporate officers. The other schemes are related. It's all the same scheme. The Florida, the California, it's all the same scheme that Custable ensnared her in. So the government wants it both ways here. You know, he wants it to be aggravating that he ensnared these innocent people, but, you know, he also ensnared an orphan, a woman who's orphaned at age 8, who rose to some prominence on her own, who developed this disease, and who was suffering from this disease that the record shows had a major impairment on her judgment. So, Judge, I believe that the sentence in this case was improperly imposed, and we'd ask that it be remanded. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Milton. Mr. Martin?
I'm just going to make two very brief points. Mr. Cuspel wasn't insidious enough not to use as a government witness. The second point is that in its version of events submitted to the probation department and in its bond pleading when it didn't want to let Mr. Cuspel out of the MCC, the government did not take the position that the violation of a judicial order enhancement applied. It has cited no guideline that allows it to kind of pick and choose and put one over here and one over there. It cited no guideline that stated when there's multiple obstructions, double counting's off. That's it.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Martin and Mr. Muldoon. You were both appointed, were you not?
Yes, sir. I was not appointed.
You were not appointed. Well, we thank you anyway, Mr. Martin, and we thank Mr. Muldoon particularly for accepting the appointment, and we thank Mr. Podlyska.